Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Lisa Simeone.
Your hair looks wild. Mind if I move in closer? What's the sense of hurt, my pride? Oh, baby, don't hold out. Baby, it's cold outside.
And if you're in Antarctica, it's really cold outside. You might think not that many people would have a chance to experience that kind of cold, but you'd be wrong. In addition to tourist junkets that are all the rage now in Antarctica, the science station called McMurdo has been operating on the southern tip of the continent since 1956. It's an important research center, attracting geologists, physicists, engineers, hydrologists, pilots, and just plain adventure seekers. McMurdo Station has grown so much, in fact, that it's really a town unto itself. It's got a harbor, 3 airfields, a heliport, over 100 buildings, even a bowling alley. After all, if people are going to work in such a bleak outpost, they need some recreation. About 1,000 people work at McMurdo in the summer, 200 in the dead of winter, and the scientists depend on the non-scientists to keep the place humming. Soundprint went to McMurdo to follow a science project and met the diverse and colorful group of people who constitute life at McMurdo. We were escorted by a woman called Shuttle Jojo.
When I came, it was the beginning of October and everything was still covered in snow. I've been here through about 3 Condition 1 storms, so that's always fun. One of the times they were closing down the ice runway, so I had come back and gotten one of the larger vehicles to carry more people out. And I get to that first curve, sure enough, an Adelie penguin is crossing the road. So I had to stop and wait. It's like, only in Antarctica can you have that
for sale by the owner.
See, everywhere there's humor if you just look.
Well, look, somebody said they sold it.
Yeah. Basically, we are running a town, so everybody's here from your street department, your water treatment, your everything. And, of course, building is a major part of all this. Hi, Charlie. Hi.
Hello, how are you doing?
We have some visitors that would like a tour.
Some visitors?
Yeah.
Now, what's this barbershop chair doing here?
This is from the old barbershop, and they took it out, and we became the caretakers of this, of these McMurdo relics. There's a lot of old things around it that shouldn't be thrown away because they're a little bit of history, like me, right? Yeah, right. I'm going to get thrown away soon.
Does anybody sit out here and get a sunning?
Yeah, at 5 in the afternoon, 5:30, quitting time. It's a wonderful place. The sun's over here. We've got a beautiful view of the range. It's a wonderful spot. It turns out to be a great place in the afternoon. In the early evenings, we have a barbecue once in a while. It's fun.
Oh, nice.
It is like a Disney setting here. You know, you're looking at the Royal Society Range. You're looking at the largest glaciers in the world that pour into McMurdo Sound. And it's like a painting. It's 10 after 8.
And what's the date?
Ooh, I don't know what the date is. Why? Do you? I just want to know when it's Sunday because we get Sunday off. But no, I don't really know what the date is. But I know that we're a day ahead of the U.S. But anyway, my name is Julia Ubaraga, and I'm a heavy equipment operator here in McMurdo Station. When I started here, it was such a tough row to hoe, especially like very few women, and you know, there were dog teams and very much old school stuff. And it had, with its wonderful freedom and wild times, you know, it also was a lot harder too. I mean, life was a lot harder. I mean, you know, it wasn't touchy feely like it is now. And now you see a lot of these kids out here with lip rings and spiked hair, you know, and they're like, hey dude, what's happening? And you want to shake them, you know, you're like, snap out of it, punk. You know where you are?
So you're doing the silverware.
Sunday brunch is pretty crazy. There are a lot of people coming in because it's their day off. And my name is Carl Klimt. I'm a dining attendant, which pretty much means washing dishes and replacing food when it's out and helping the cooks, anything like that. And, you know, some days it feels like 12 hours. But it's more like 10 with breaks. So I'm here for 10 hours, but I'm really working for 9 hours. I get paid for 9 hours.
Thank you.
It's the longest job I've ever held. I mean, most of my jobs have been sort of part-time and or maybe like a month or two, stuff like that. Well, 2 months actually on Tuesday. So, yeah. But this is the most I've worked in a two-month span. I got here like October 4th. It was maybe minus 40 when I stepped off the plane. You know, you breathe in really deep and you cough because it's so cold. It was interesting. I hadn't quite experienced that yet. But the highest point was definitely stepping off the airplane, setting foot on really thick ice. It was very expansive. It felt otherworldly, close to feelings of what I might imagine it would be like to step on the moon. Places that don't want you to be there is an amazing feeling to be close to nature, I think, is the way I keep thinking about it.
Skuas are great. The skuas, so there was a guy down here, and only one time was there a skua scientist, and he was studying monogamy in skuas. And there's this whole syndrome of the cheating male and the female sitting on the nest with the little baby skua. And the male comes back, and she picks up, you know, like the smell of another bird. And they get into this huge domestic argument, and he skulks around with his wings down, and baby, take me back. I won't do it again. She puffs up like, you know, this is my nest, and I will never take you back. I'm not making this up. It was so hard not to anthropomorphize, you know? You go, all right, so all animals are, just, you know, more or less the same. But Karen Joyce, and I'm the IT computer manager for the Crary Lab, so we take care of all the scientists' computing and IT needs. When I started here in 1990, this was a military base. It was a Navy base, and the demographics were completely different. It was a hardship assignment. For most people, they had absolutely no interest in Antarctica. Some of them had no idea where they were. They made a point of never going outside except to go from building to building, and they're proud of that.
Huh.
This was not the same town back then. It was about 20%, 25% women. Your currency was dramatically overvalued back then. Of course, it was 17 years ago. So I had a different impression about my currency. But yeah, definitely women were controlling like hard currency in a ruble environment. You know, you had something everybody wanted. Women like get down here and they fall in love by Christmas. And then they get their hearts broken badly by the end of the season or right when they get off the ice. In Christchurch, you know, they say you're married until the pavement. Or you're only 8 hours away from being ugly. That's another one. Isn't that lovely?
Wow.
It's men and women for that one because a lot of people who are first-year people down here reinvent themselves. So no one knows me. I'm a cipher. I'm a stranger. I can remake myself. I see the whole storyline. It's like I have the novel and I've already read the novel. I can see exactly what's going to happen, but they can't.
Shuttle Bob. I drive a shuttle van in cargo, ATO, and I'd work 12 hours a day, 5 days a week, taking people to and from different places around McMurdo. 11 years ago, I looked into Antarctic employment. 5 years after that, I decided that I had been procrastinating on it, and yet another 3 years passed before I went to the job fair and applied for work. That brought me down here this year. We're leaving the galley building, 155, which is dormitories and what's known as Highway 1, a lot of administration offices.
And we're walking towards?
We're actually, yeah, walking towards building 165. That's the age building. It's a lot of administration offices for running the ice runway. And we're going to go over a wood step bridge to get over various pipes and heating ducts and the like.
Now, you've gone over the bridge before?
Yes, several times. But I've never noticed the troll before. That's very interesting. Oh, my goodness. This is a rusty steel troll, welded sculpture. From its place and its protective gear, it certainly is. It looks like it's protecting this bridge.
And what is the troll wearing?
The troll is looking like it's wearing a wool blanket of sorts, perhaps in a traditional native manner. It's also wearing some beads, plastic rounded beads like you might get if you were a vacationer in New Orleans during Mardi Gras week.
Okay, my name is John Scott. I'm here with one of the science projects. We collect meteorites in Antarctica on the ice sheet. And I'm the safety and mountaineer.
Well, one of the
interesting things that we've been seeing is on this little bridge, there is a large wooden compass and a sundial. It's hard to tell where north, south, east, and west is. But is this really pointing true north?
Yep, that faces towards the cardinal direction, true north. And it also has a little arrow pointing towards magnetic north.
Is that GS? Is that
no? That's another coordinate system, and that stands for grid north, grid south, grid west. And of course, down here at the poles, the lines of longitude all come together at once. It makes navigation a little bit more tricky, especially in aircraft. And so what they're doing is they're making a planar system fit a round globe. Well, I forget what our longitude is here, but it's not too far off 180 because the grid south is almost facing true north. Grid north here usually points towards South Pole. Well, last year we had just under 6 weeks in the field, and we only had 12 working days out of the entire season. It was a tough season last year just because of the high winds that kept us hunkered down in our tents and playing cards and Scrabble and
6 weeks of playing cards and Scrabble.
Well, that's what you have to expect down here in the Antarctic. You just have to take what nature gives you and go with the punches.
The thing was with me, I'm trapped here, but I get a lot more done. The trappings of an institution, this little jail that we're stuck in with all these rules, actually gives me more structure, and therefore I get stuff done, which is kind of sad. Pictures of dogs hurt me because I really miss dogs, you know, or anything nurturable. Back when I first got here, we were allowed to have houseplants, you know, and you would never really think of houseplants as being something that would bring out the, you know, the soft and feminine nurturing instinct in people. But when they made us give away our houseplants, boy, was that a bad year. And that was like 10 years ago. So the treaty, the Antarctic Treaty, says no introduced species. So a lot of people had trees practically, you know, made everything homey. And now you got to rip these things down and kill them when you planted it 10 years ago. That was so painful. People hid them. They had little stashes where they put their plant. Please don't make me kill my plant, you know. No, we're taking your plant away. No, not me. It was awful.
Oh, wow. It's a greenhouse.
I know.
This is fantastic,
isn't it? You just kind of go in. Now, see, as I was telling about the tour at the waste treatment plant, they will actually have tomatoes that will sprout. Evidently, there are some seeds that will pass through the human digestive tract and still work. So I thought to myself after seeing that tour, I wonder what they grow at the greenhouse. I walk in and go, tomatoes. It's all brought in from the United States, perfectly okay.
They don't harvest seeds.
Yeah, they're not recycled. But, I mean, look at all the variety that we have, and they have volunteers that can come down here, and you can pick.
I was wondering who gets to work in here.
Whoever wants to, whenever you need the green fill, you know.
Wow.
Or over in there, they have a hammock that you can put out between the two. So if you need to get away, bring your book. Put out the hammock and lay there. Oh. You know, you have to take off a lot of these layers of clothes because it's way too hot in here.
It is. It's hot like a greenhouse.
It's like 75 degrees. We could die here. Get us back to that zero. And our herbs are out in the other room.
Mm. You can even smell it. The thyme smells great.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Because the first thing I noticed when they opened up the plane at first, there's the cold smell of nothing. Odors require a little humidity to be carried through the air, and we're so arid here that you don't smell anything. So coming in here and getting a whiff is wonderful.
So the greenhouse has got full spectrum lights. Does it have the feeling of being in a rainforest or any kind of natural environment? No, it's a whole bunch of plants sticking in white plastic buckets in vermiculite with this raging fluorescent light above you. I don't find that place soothing at all. That's not the same as having like a couch covered in an old, you know, caftan, a cat on your lap, and a whole bunch of houseplants. You know, we didn't have cats, but we had the feeling of, you know, a home, and that was mostly due to plants. So we've lost that.
This is all of our hangout places. Got the coffee house, the little brown building. There's the gerbil gym where you need to go work out, you can do your treadmills. They've got all sorts of nice equipment in there.
I have a key to the bowling alley, I think. What do I have in my pocket? Yes, in the blue building here. You know, from age 18 or 19 to, I know one person is 78. That's our little age range here. It's amazing how well everybody in those age brackets do as far as interacting. That's been impressive to me.
I kind of hang with an outdoor group that likes to downhill ski or snowboard or hike, whereas then they're going to have the card players in the Southern at night, or the drinkers, or, you know, the knitters, the Stitch and Knitch. There's a little group here that meet, and there's men in it, and they meet. And I don't know if they're happening right now this year, but they'll sit and they'll gather up on, you know. There's the bingo crowd, and there's the arts and crafts crowd, and... you know, I have just worked here so long that I'm just kind of, I am in the love my privacy crowd.
The place has become much softer. In some respects, it's become softer. We used to have like a wild, rowdy cowboy, anything goes. You could ride around in the buckets of the loaders, you know, those big, heavy equipment loaders out there. You could have three people sitting there drinking beer, you know, on a Friday. Sounds like fun now. Legs hanging off, kicking in the reeds, you know. That's certainly, you can't do anything anymore.
Well, how is it softer?
Oh, just the, you know, the whole Frisbee crowd and the how cool can my outdoor gear be? Gee, you got the new Marmot hard shell. I mean, some of the people down here cannot get enough expensive outdoor gear. As soon as they get one piece of outdoor gear, they're right on the web all over again trying to find the next piece of cool outdoor gear. I wear the company's horrible-looking, ill-fitting, you know, I look schleppy. I've got everything hangs down to my knees, you know, and just ill, you know, it's all ripped up. It's sort of my anti-chic thing. The more ruined it is with patches on it, obviously you've been here a while, you know? So you want your Carhartts to be just patches on top of patches so that you can prove to the town, well, you see, I'm a veteran. Look at my clothes. Even though I work in, I'm a computer person, you know? It's the badge.
You know, I'm both an armchair mountaineer and an aspiring mountaineer, but something about being closer to nature and its strongest elements makes me hone my definition of adventure. When I was reading Endurance, the Shackleton story, and it was just very compelling. It was a wonderful description of a fantastic place, and of course we're very far from Shackleton's times and you know, location, but at the same time it was just a very imagination capturing time. And so basically I think I came down here because I liked Shackleton's book, but yeah, I get to learn skills unique to Antarctica, and I get to ride in the little machines and go play in the snow. It's great.
In fact, this little island they named after me out here.
Is an island named after you?
Yep.
How did that happen?
Well, there's... actually, it was a gal named Robbie Score that was the head of the Quarry Lab, nominated two of us. Rob Robbins, the dive master, and myself had been here 20 years. And what was happening, apparently, was the surveyor at the time, who was new here, was sitting in the Quarry Lab doing his work, and he was entertaining everyone that sat close to him and saying, hey, how'd you like something named after him? Yeah, well, these people didn't have very much time on the ice. So Robbie saw this happening and she thought, well, that isn't very, you know, that's not a good deal. So she nominated us to have something named after you in Antarctica. You can still be alive. Everywhere else, you have to be dead. After this happened, the National Science Foundation called us into a Saturday meeting and wanted us there, Rob Robbins and I, and they presented us with a map and each of us, like Uberaga Island in big print. So that's pretty cool, having that, you know.
I'm one of the, you know, the handful of people that have got 30-plus years of working in the Antarctic.
And what draws you down here? I mean, there's other places, right, where you could be looking for meteorites?
Yeah, lots of meteorites coming from the dry deserts as well, Australia, southwest U.S., but those areas are too hot for me, and I've always been drawn to the polar regions and the mountains you know, getting the opportunity to come here was a dream that I'd had for a long time. And to have fallen into this position of going out every year, finding meteorites, it's a big Easter egg hunt for me, you know.
I mean, Al Gore was here as a senator, and we were out at, he got stuck with a group of senators as well, out in the Dry Valleys, and I was working out there augmenting a science group as a helper. And I remember, you know, the thing was in those days is to get people's name tags. And the best thing was a counting coup, you know, you just ripped it off their coats. But I had to ask him for it. And he was like, no, I can't, I need it. And I said, you're Al Gore. Give me the bloody name tag. And everybody gave him grief. Come on, Al, give me that. Give her that name tag. Oh, okay.
Timers, can I get you up to the start line, please? Timers up to the start line. The start line is the cones. You guys can move up a little bit.
Oh, we're going on the turkey trot. Well, in my case, the turkey walk.
You run like a turkey. Well, you don't actually have to. It's just a little 5K we do every Thanksgiving.
I'm specializing in medium pace walking. This man's looking a bit more serious than me,
I'm
though.
I'm hoping I can stay ahead of you then.
Well, there's different training methods. Some people just show up. Other people actually train for the race. But this is just really all in good fun.
You run indoors, for me.
Run between buildings and heavy weather.
Which I haven't done much of lately. No, it's a beautiful day.
Yeah, no, very lucky.
If we could turn the wind off, it'd be a perfect day.
The TV says it's about 28 positive and 21 with wind chill. But it feels colder than that to me.
Runners ready? On your mark. Get set.
You're not recording.
Give yeah. your analogy. This is a line, like standing in line. For
well, Led Zeppelin. Every time. The problem was I got beat up every time also, you know.
You can't hold off the wearing mask.
I will try to get the receipts. Yeah. Absolutely. But that can be your job.
Yeah.
Save them for receipts.
Okay.
Yeah.
These people were not before us. I was so vocal, but that was not the force in line of
vision. All right, so we got this table, that table, that table. We're territorial.
We're like skewers.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Wonderful food, salads and turkeys, and
shrimp cocktail. Love shrimp cocktail.
This food is awesome. I've got some very rare roast beef, which is very tasty. It's asparagus, roast vegetables, and some mashed potato. And it's incredible.
I'm taking a picture of the big Andrel family enjoying a Thanksgiving meal. There's lots of salad, lots of veggies on the table, turkey and ham and green bean casserole, all of the things that you would have for your family Thanksgiving, which is wonderful because I think we sort of become a family down here. And so having this family together, I don't know, it helps you be away from your own family when you're down here for a long time.
I had a really interesting conversation with a friend of mine last night, my ex-Marine, and he was telling me how good it is here and stuff, and he's older, maybe 35 or something, older than me, and I felt like he had a more perspective on the job market out there and stuff, but I just felt like I had other things to do. There are other dreams to accomplish and things, and I think this is a wonderful place. But it's a very special thing for me to be with my family. So being away Thanksgiving and Christmas is a little bit hard.
There's a lot of us here who it's just now, you know, become a lifestyle. You know, it's sort of like I need the 12-step program to get out. I mean, we had a T-shirt that said Antarctica, just say no. You know, I can't. I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I'd be missing out. And I know there's a bunch of us that feel that way, you know. And then when the old-timers, when a lot of really cool people don't come back, you notice that they're not here, and it's sad. They're like, there's about 10 people missing this year that were the life of the party. Really neat folks that aren't back, and it's a bummer, you know.
Strangers turn to friends. The bonds we make strong and fast. I sink into bliss. Well, that's by Jen Patrick.
I'm about done with this place. I don't know. I'm full-time with the company, so I don't have any choice. This is not an adventure for me at all. Anybody who stays here long enough is probably going to become cynical because the company just beats the cynicism into you by making you watch, you know, videos on how to walk correctly. And, you know, you don't notice the cage factor of being here until they make your cage a little bit tighter. Eventually, though, when you're in a cage, you forget, you know, you don't even notice the bars anymore. That's all you see.
Last year, at the end of our field season, we were flying over a lot of area that I'd been in previous years, and it was a spectacular clear day, and mountains were glittering and shining, and we were flying over sites that I was intimately familiar with. So I was just essentially reliving several years just by flying over it, and I became somewhat emotional, realizing that I have fewer years left to do this than what I've already done. And it's been a spectacular journey and an amazing privilege to be able to have seen the Antarctic like this and spend time with very interesting people in the field, as well as make some lifelong friends here in McMurdo.
Life at McMurdo was produced by the Soundprint staff as part of Pole to Pole, an international media collaboration covering the International Polar Year, produced with support from the National Science Foundation. Special thanks to Peter Webb. You can listen to this program and all the episodes from the Pole to Pole series anytime you want, just by visiting our website, soundprint.org. On the next Soundprint, looking back to the International Geophysical Year of the 1950s, when Antarctic exploration meant guesswork and luck. IGY, On the Ice, next week on Soundprint. CDs of Soundprint episodes are available for a small fee by calling toll-free 1-888-38-TAPES, or you can order online at soundprint.org. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU and American University. We love hearing from you. The best way to get in touch is by email. The address is talkback@soundprint.org. Soundprint is production assistant Nkechi Mogekwu and audio engineer Jared Weisbrot. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Lisa Simeone.